Hello, you're listening to the C to Z of Movies. My name's Colin. I am the C. Joining me is Zijan the Z. Hello, Zijan.
Hey, Colin. I'm almost finished with the last book of The Wheel of Time.
Excellent.
Memory of Light. And it's making me very sad because it's really, really good so far. And like every single chapter I've been reading has been excellent. And I'm just dreading the time that it'll be all over and all the characters will be gone.
Then you can start again from the beginning. Read them all again. I've read them. Actually, I've only read the last book once, I think, but I've read the series maybe four times, kind of up to whatever point it had been published at the point I was reading.
Yeah, the issue is that you are a much quicker reader than I am.
Not these days. It's taking me about 6 months to get through David Copperfield.
I mean, I started this before the pandemic started.
Okay, I'm quicker than that.
Yeah, exactly, right? So there you go. It's going to be taking me some time to reread it. But the last book is amazing, though. The last book has been...
This just in from 12 years ago.
I know. But some people have not read it yet, and they should.
Yeah, if you watch the TV series, the books are better.
Way better.
Way better, yeah. But maybe season two will be good. Who knows? But it's you're nicely on theme for fantasy there, Zijan. Because today is Dungeons and Dragons : Honor Among Thieves.
I don't think they pronounce the colon bit.
I think you're probably right. They're showing the same confidence that that Master and Commander did in putting a colon in their first film to show that they want a franchise. Or Pirates of the Caribbean. They did the same thing more successfully. we'll come on to that. We're also doing a quiz on the films of Cameron Crowe. We're looking back at Platoon and much more. But we start, as we always do, Zijan, with movie news. What have you got?
Actually, you start this, right, Colin? Because the biggest news that came out this week was Star Wars Day.
It's Star Wars Celebration. It's happening right now as we record. I think it's still going. Is that a four-day thing, I think?
I have no clue, but you should do it because I do not care.
Fair enough. Big news come out of Star Wars Celebration, including the announcement of three new movies. I look forward to every single one of these being cancelled over the next year or two. They've really got themselves into a rut of announcing movies, or more usually announcing trilogies.
And cancelling them.
And then cancelling them a while later. And then... Yeah. Maybe I think everything basically got cancelled. So the Rian Johnson trilogy got cancelled, I think. I'm not sure officially. The Patty Jenkins film got cancelled. The Taika Waititi one, I think, has been cancelled, maybe. The Game of Thrones guys trilogy, I think, has probably been cancelled. Et cetera. But these ones, the latest ones, maybe less likely to be cancelled. Maybe a bit more thought about these.
Why do you say so?
Well, it feels like they're not just saying... randomly, let's do a trilogy and hope for the best. There seems like some thought has gone into these. And they've got some good names here. So James Mangold is directing a film that's going to be looking at the origins of the Jedi. He has described it as like a Ten Commandments for the Jedi. I've never seen the film The Ten Commandments, although I have read the Bible. I suspect there won't be a lot of similarity. James Mangold, of course, is a great director. Logan, Ford versus Ferrari, amazing. Walk the Line. And indeed, there might be some more James Mangold news this episode. Dave Filoni, who I believe is involved in The Mandalorian, he's doing a film set between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. May or may not be linked to The Mandalorian series. You'd expect it probably is. And someone called Shamin Obey-Chinoy, who's been involved in Ms. Marvel, although didn't direct it. Oh, no, maybe she did direct it.
I think she directed a few episodes.
Right. Is doing something to do with New Jedi Order. And you know who's coming back for that, Zijan?
Who is coming back?
Daisy Ridley is back as Rey. You thought you'd seen the last of her in the frankly awful The Rise of Skywalker, when she looked at some ghosts and was like, I'm a Skywalker. but she's back. I think it's going to be set a good few years after, I think. No word yet on whether other cast members will be back. I suspect probably not. I don't think they necessarily want to tie this in too heavily to Rise of Skywalker, so I wouldn't perhaps expect John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, etc. But you never know.
I mean, Daisy really hasn't had the best career after Star Wars, I would say. I mean, she was in Murder on the Orient Express.
Yes.
And that's it.
She was in that thing with Tom Holland that everyone hated. Chaos Walking.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I saw on Graham Norton once, basically just begging for work. Oh, Daisy. Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
So perhaps understandable that she's leapt at the chance to come back. But if I had to guess which of these would be cancelled, I'd say probably the Dave Filoni one. But I think the James Mangold one stands a good chance. He's quite hot right now. And it would be a shame to bring out Daisy Ridley at Comic-Con and then, not Comic-Con, at Star Wars Celebration.
And then not putting her in a film and cancelling the film straight after.
So it feels they have to be pretty sure on that one. Although, in fairness, Henry Cavill did something very similar, so who knows. So you say you don't care these, but will you be watching any or all of these films?
I mean, if I'm forced to, then yes. I mean, I have Disney Plus with me right now. I have not seen any of the Star Wars series, so I don't see why I would start by watching the films. I mean, I didn't like the last film either. And
no one liked the last film, though. Well, James Lee is the long-term substitute for Star Wars movies on the TZ Movies podcast.
He's always welcome to return.
So you might not be forced to.
Yes.
We shall see. So if you're not forced to, let's say James is available.
Yes.
Would you still watch, let's say, James Mangold's Star Wars Origins movie?
If the reviews are good, because I like Logan. And James Mangold has come back with very good films, so the reviews are good, and probably yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Are you going to watch James Mangold's Indiana Jones? Are we doing an episode on James Mangold's Indiana Jones?
I don't know. I assumed we were, but who?
Let me check my spreadsheet. Yes, we are.
Yep.
There you go. That's. I mean, there's obviously a whole bunch of Star Wars news, but it's mostly about TV stuff, I think. I've watched more than you have. Because you've watched none.
Yep.
But I'm definitely not plugged into it. So, who cares?
More Disney news. And this is everyone's favorite Disney news, which is, what Disney cartoon can I turn into live action film right now? Mm. Dwayne The Rock Johnson has announced, as you expect him to announce, a Moana live action film. And this is probably the most recent animated film that they are turning into live action, and I would guess that Dwayne Johnson will reprise his role as Maui.
Will he be the first person to reprise their role in a live action?
Potentially, yeah.
Oh, no, wait a minute. James Earl Jones came back for Lion King, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's not really live action, is it?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, so I love Moana. It's just a bit too soon. But this is Disney anyway, so I mean, we can always count on them for trying to squeeze as much money as they can from everyone. Yeah,
it's a very popular film. I'm amazed that he's got time to break into his schedule of making Black Adam sequels. That was
maybe he wants Maui to fight Superman now.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm amazed we haven't had a Frozen live action movie announced yet.
Well, I think they're still continuing with the animated series still, so not yet. Okay. But they're also doing an Aristocats film. This will be live action / CGI because there are cats involved.
I miss
that. That's why you need CGI. And Questlove is directing it.
All right.
Yep.
So he's more of a music person.
Yep. Do you know Aristocats? Because I think it's one of those few Disney films that I've not seen.
You know, I've not seen it. I know the song "Everybody Wants to Be a Cat."
Yep,
but I've not seen the movie. No.
But more Disney live action films for those who need something mediocre to watch.
What's the worst that could happen? Making an all star film based around people being cats.
We've seen that.
Yes. More Disney news. Well, this time it's Marvel. Liv Tyler is back as Betty Ross in Captain America: New World Order. She's been seen on set. She obviously played the character in The Incredible Hulk when it was Eric Banner alongside her.
Is it Eric Banner? Was it?
No, sorry, it wasn't Eric Banner. It was
Ed Norton.
Ed Norton, thank you. In fact, yes, both her father and her boyfriend have been recast since then. Sadly, of course, Harrison Ford has taken over the role of General Ross. Liv Tyler was in What If, wasn't she?
I cannot remember. I assume there was a Betty Ross in there. So I assume she would be playing it because there's no other Betty Ross in the MCU, is there?
There is not. No, it's Jennifer Connelly in the non-MCU version.
Yeah.
She wasn't in What If. It was voiced by someone else. All right. But the fact the character was there kind of made us think, okay, they're probably bringing that character back.
I mean, just like Daisy Ridley, what is Liv Tyler up to nowadays?
It's a good question. Good question. Not a huge amount, I don't think.
Yeah.
As people probably know, Marvel don't have the rights to make a Hulk solo movie because Universal hold those rights and they can't get their act together to sort that out. So they've tended to put Hulk stuff into other films, so most obviously in Thor Ragnarok when it was a Hulk Thor movie. But it does sound like with Ross, both Betty Ross and General Ross, that New World Order might be a bit Hulky. I don't think Mark Ruffalo's been confirmed for it, but I'd be amazed if they bring back Betty Ross and not having the Hulk.
You know, right? Ever since this whole Phase 4, this multiverse of the MCU has started, I've started making a list of all the new characters that they've introduced in every single TV series and every single film, and there are so many of them.
Okay.
So many of them. Remember, Hulk is a son now. Scar.
Oh, for crying out loud, yes, I've forgotten Scar.
There you go.
Not happy about that.
I just want them to just reduce the number of people, really, and not add more people.
Yeah, because I'm assuming at some point we're going to get Eric Banner or Ed Norton or both in a multiverse type thing. I'm assuming. I don't know if Ed Norton would agree to it. He's probably still a bit miffed, but Eric Banner might.
More Marvel news anyway. We've got Josh Friedman, who is rewriting the Fantastic Four movie. He's part of the James Cameron's writing team on the Avatar sequels. So he's going to rewrite the whole Fantastic Four film. Hopefully, it'll be better than the previous ones, which isn't hard. There's also a rewrite for the Thunderbolts. Lee Sung Jin has been tasked to rewrite that as well. So more rewrites coming up.
Yeah, and I think this is all fairly common. I think a lot of these things will go through several iterations. I don't think it's time to panic necessarily.
Nope.
Hopefully.
Well, anyway, it's a piece of news that includes Marvel, so that was my segue. Also, Deadpool 3 has added Matthew McFadden, who is from Succession, which is a very big show on HBO apparently, and I've not seen it, but.
Yeah, I've not seen it. It's on Sky Atlantic over here, I think. I'm intrigued that Matthew McFadden is now being described as a Succession actor. Is that, have we forgotten Mr. Darcy in Pride and Prejudice?
Yeah, definitely.
Have we forgotten Spooks? Have we forgotten Anna Karenina?
Most definitely.
I think we're just underselling his career.
Basically,
you must have seen Keira Knightley's Pride and Prejudice.
No, I haven't.
Oh, really?
I've not. Mm. Yeah, I've seen so many Pride and Prejudice parodies, and I've not seen the Keira Knightley.
Right. One. Okay. Cool. Good to have him on board. James Mangold, I mentioned him earlier. I think it seems he's now being confirmed that he's going to be writing and directing Swamp Thing, which is something that. As far as I can tell, he was kind of tricked into saying by he was on some film premiere, I don't know. He was asked outside, like, what's she doing first? Swamp Thing or something else?
Very clever. Very clever.
And he was like, you're not going to get me. I'm going to do whichever one comes first in the roster. So, yes, he seems to have, James Gunn quote tweeted this and just seems to have confirmed it. So, I think we all were fairly sure that was going to happen, but confirmed he's a busy man.
Nice. I'm not too sure. I'm too excited to see Swamp Thing, but yeah, good.
No, not one I'm particularly excited by. There was a TV series that came out not very long ago that no one watched, but apparently those small number of people who did thought it was great.
Yep. More casting news. Kumail Nanjiani and Patton Oswalt are joining the sequel for Ghostbusters. Yes.
The only Ghostbusters film you've seen.
The only Ghostbusters film I've seen and still is.
Will you be watching the sequel with Kumail Nanjiani and Patton Oswalt?
Probably. I mean, I did enjoy the first one, although it became very absurd at the end. And it's good fun. So, probably watch it. But, yeah. Maybe I should watch the original.
It's all right. what else we got? Shrek 5, we knew was coming, despite everyone's best efforts. And apparently the original cast is back in talks to star. So there was a belief it was going to be a reboot, but it probably isn't now, I guess. So, again, Cameron Diaz has not that long ago announced her return to acting. Eddie Murphy is off the back of You People, I suppose. And I don't know what Mike Myers is up to. Probably he did that Wayne's World commercial. But they're in talks to come back to Shrek once more.
I thought Cameron Diaz was like retired from acting or something.
Yeah, she came back.
Oh, of course she did.
There was some announcement she was coming back. I forget what for. Yeah. It still amazes me that the first Shrek movie came out in the same year that the first Fast and Furious movie came out.
They 20 seem like, years ago.
Yeah, Fast and Furious franchise doesn't feel anywhere near that old to me. Let's keep making Shrek films, I say.
I mean, Puss in Boots has gotten rave reviews and still haven't seen it yet.
Apparently that was good.
Yeah. I can say that. Apparently it was good, but I have not seen it.
Busy man.
So Adam Driver is in talks to star in the sequel for Heat.
Yeah, imaginatively titled Heat 2.
Yes, I've not seen the original film in 1995, which stars quite a lot of big names. De Niro, Pacino, Val Kilmer.
Natalie Portman's in it, isn't she?
Mm.
I have seen it. I thought it was fine. It seems to be adored by a lot of people. Because it was the first time, I think that... Al Pacino and Robert De Niro had shared a screen. They'd both been in Godfather Part 2, but I don't think they're on everyone. In fact, I'm confident they weren't ever on screen at the same time because they're in different, very different times. But so I think that's the first time they shared a screen. But that's, I don't know. Michael Mann, I think, does some good stuff and uses the city very well, but it's not my favourite of his, by any means.
And Adam Driver has worked with Michael Mann before on a Ferrari, I think. So,
The Ferrari?
On Ferrari? Is there a film called Ferrari?
Maybe. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I think that was written, so I've just copied it in.
Okay. Maybe just they co-lease a car. I'll look him up. I'm driving Michael Mann. Ferrari. No, it's not out yet. Okay. Fine. I'm driver is playing Enzo Ferrari.
Yeah.
I seem to remember making a hilarious joke about a driver playing Ferrari. Would have been great. Michael Mann did a book not that long ago, I think last year, of Heat 2 on which, so we all assumed at some point that he'd be...
It's going to happen, yeah.
So that's what's happening. Back to Disney, Chris Pine, who we'll be hearing a lot more from, or about, we probably won't be hearing from him, in this episode, has joined the cast of Wish, the prequel to Pinocchio that we didn't know we always wanted.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wanted.
He's got Disney history, probably. Now I say that, has he? He feels very Disney.
Why?
He's such a look. He's got such a Disney face.
Is This Means War a Disney film?
No. Into the Woods was a Disney film.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That is true.
A Wrinkle in Time was a Disney film. The Princess Diaries 2 was a Disney film.
Oh, apparently more than...
The Finest Hours, apparently, was a Disney film.
Too many.
Too many. Okay, well, he's going to do at least one more.
Yeah. Okay, good on him. Austin Butler is starring in a film called City on Fire, which is based on an adaptation of a book, which is published in 2022, apparently. It focuses on two criminal empires, one Irish, the other Italian, and over the control of New England. And it's based on a modern-day Helen of Troy event that tears them apart and starts a brutal war.
Is this true?
I don't think so.
I don't remember the Irish-Americans and the Italian-Americans stereotypically don't get on.
I don't remember them stealing someone else's woman because of their beauty.
I don't remember that bit, no. I'm also not sure which one of them won New England. I don't think either of them. I mean, if anything, I'd have thought that would be in the English based on the name. But who knows? Okay, good for Austin Butler. Good for him.
I wonder if he's changed his voice again, though, because I mean, I've heard him since the Graham Norton show. Like, he basically cannot change his Elvis voice.
Yeah, what a prat. Well, he can't be doing Memphis voice up in New England. Say the lines and don't bump into the furniture. Zach Galifianakis is going to be voicing Lilo in the Lilo and Stitch live-action remake, which I guess means Lilo's the one who's not a girl.
Lilo is the girl. Stitch is the alien.
I may have written this down wrong.
Lilo is a little girl, Colin.
You sure?
Yes, Colin. Do you want to grant me 1 point for this quiz? Why would a girl be called Stitch?
That's a good point. Well, I guess he's voicing the girl then. I thought I wrote it down wrong. It's hard to say.
Yes. My last bit of news, while Colin corrects himself, is...
No, I'm going to stick with it.
I'm looking forward for Zach Galifianakis playing a little girl then.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, it's the thing that's most likely to make me actually watch this movie, is if he's just for the fascination.
A little Hawaiian girl, as though all the hoo-ha on Aloha wasn't bad enough.
The Aloha hoo-ha.
Yeah, Aloha hoo-ha.
I think the world is ready for a middle-aged bearded man to play a little Hawaiian girl.
Of course, yes. Anyway, my last bit of news is that the producers behind the upcoming sequel for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse has made a short film that's set in the same world. We don't really talk about short films in this podcast because we like our films long and lengthy and way, way, way over 2 hours. the film is called The Spider Within. And you will see Miles Morales. I copied the synopsis, but it's so generic that it's pointless for me to repeat it.
He's doing
Spider-Man stuff, basically.
Is it? I guess they're releasing it online or something, are they?
No, I have no clue. This is Sony, right? They don't have their own streaming services, so...
They've got a deal with Netflix, haven't they? But if they're making a short, I mean, they're never, unless they put it in front of the movie on cinemas or something, which that seems a bit weird.
I mean, shots don't make money on its own in cinemas.
No, they'll probably just release it on the website or something, I thought.
Yeah, I imagine so.
The only other thing I've got is that Paddington in Peru is going to start shooting in July. It's happening.
What a way to end this news segment, Colin.
Yep. Save the worst till last. That's what I always say.
I know.
Let's move on to See or Not to Zed, where we tell you, the listener, the movies we have recently been seeing and whether you should see them or not Zed them. Zijan.
Yep.
What have you been watching? Should we see it? Should we Zed it?
I saw the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know we're going to watch it too, Colin.
I'm not sure I am.
Because it stars Anya Taylor-Joy and you watch every single thing that Anya Taylor-Joy is in.
I mean, it's a bold claim, considering that I've not seen The Menu.
Have you not?
No.
And you've not seen The Witch, I assume?
I've not seen The Witch. And I've not seen The Super Mario Brothers.
You are a horrible Anya Taylor-Joy fan.
I'm sorry, Anya. It's a thing of the past now. I've moved on. I'm now watching all Zach Galifianakis' films. So.
Clearly, yeah. So for a movie based on a video game, it isn't half bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we all know about the very, very bad live-action Super Mario Brothers film that came out in the early 90s, I think, that got really, really, really panned by the critics. This, first of all, is animated, so that makes a huge difference. You don't have to see a live-action Mario and live-action Luigi and live-action turtles walking around. Oh, but it's for, I think, people who grew up playing the video games would be satisfied with the film.
Did you grow up playing the video games?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are a lot of homages to the video games, as you expect. Not just the Mario Brothers, but spin-offs as well, like Mario Kart and Luigi's Mansion. Good use of music, because there are a lot of identifiable tunes from the games that appear in the film as well. The plot, as you expect, is non-existent. Well, there is a plot. It's probably better than some other Sony films out there. But it's what you expect, really. Mario trying to save the Mushroom Kingdom from Bowser. The pacing was very breezy, which I really kind of liked. Like, okay, there was no time for slow down or savor the moment. There's no like emotional soft moments or whatever. It's just go, which it kind of worked. So it felt like a very quick 1.5 hours spent in watching a film. I was definitely not the only grown up in the cinema, I think.
Okay, that's good.
So that helped. But yeah, it's decent. It's decent. I don't think you should go to cinema to watch it. You may just catch it out on Netflix when it comes out then.
Yeah, it's not had great reviews, has it?
No. It's not got great reviews, but I thought it was okay.
Hmm. Okay, it's not getting terrible reviews. It's kind of getting middling. Okay. I'm not going to watch it.
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Not for Anya Taylor-Joy.
She's going to be so disappointed.
Not for Chris Pratt. Not for Charlie Day. Not for Fred Armisen.
Jack Black. Seth Rogen.
It's a good cast. Well, maybe I'll catch it on streaming. I don't know. I watched that Pokemon movie. I'm just looking through the list. I didn't see The Northman.
Northman's a very good film, though.
I didn't see Playmobil, the movie.
She just stars in excellent films.
Is Playmobil the movie an excellent film?
No, no, Colin, you have to tell me that, given you're the biggest fan of...
I've not seen the film Barry, whatever that is. Oh, wait a minute, I have seen that film. Oh, it's a good film.
There you go,
she's great. I've not seen Marrowbone. An English language, Spanish psychological horror mystery drama. There's a lot of stuff going on in that. I saw a film called Boston Strangler, which is on Disney Plus. I think it's on Hulu in America, maybe. Which is about two journalists, the main one being played by Keira Knightley, who follow on the lead of the Boston Strangler, famous murderer or maybe murderers, who struck fear into the hearts of the women of Boston. In the maybe 60s.
This is odd for you, right, Colin? Like, I've known you for so long. So this film is about murder. Okay, it's about journalism, so that's probably your big hook. But, you know, it has Keira Knightley in it, and I know you don't particularly care for Keira Knightley.
Yeah, I've got nothing against Keira Knightley. I think she's a... In fact, I think I've maybe previously said on the podcast that she's a limited actress. I may have said that. I think this is the best performance I've ever seen from Keira Knightley, with the possible exception of Pride and Prejudice, a film that we've already discussed. In fact, she was very good in that, maybe second to that. She's playing American, which I don't think I've ever seen her do before. I really enjoy journalism movies in general. This is much more a journalism movie than it is a murder movie. Like, you don't see any of the murders or anything like that. I'd say she's phenomenal in it. Carrie Coon plays another journalist. She's also very good. It's a good cast. Actually, I say it's a good cast. The performances are good. It's not filled with star names. Something like Bill Camp, Chris Cooper, David Dasmalchian. I kind of recognise all these people and they're solid, but they're not exactly selling hundreds of tickets. In Venice, I don't think it was released in cinema. The direction is a little bit by numbers. It's by a guy called Matt Ruskin, I don't really know. But he seems to believe that every time she crosses the street, you have to see that shot. It's a little bit jarring. The script isn't fantastic. I think it's kind of solid, but nothing more than that. It's a shame, because I think she is, Keira Knightley's really strong performance, and it would have been nice if she had a better script to work with. It also very reminiscent of films like Zodiac, which have done something similar better. So I think it's worth watching, but you're kind of left thinking, But you kind of, if you want this kind of classic journalistic or even murder mystery denouement of, wow, I finally figured out because of such and such, that doesn't really happen, because it didn't happen. But worth a watch.
Okay.
We move on to our main topic of the day, which is Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves. Zijan, tell us about Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves.
I mean, we have to start by, asking the same question that we've asked ever since we know this film was going to come out, whether we've played Dungeons and Dragons before. Yeah. I mean, this feels like it's up your street, Colin, because you do improv, and Dungeons and Dragons has lots of improv.
There's quite a lot of crossover in this world. It's true. I have never played Dungeons and Dragons. I did a little bit of a role-playing game, which wasn't that, but similar ideas, in 2004, 2005-ish. And I didn't love it, to be honest. And I I've not been tempted. A friend of mine is trying to get a few of us into this, so I suspect I will be giving it a go in the next couple of months. I can report back.
Okay, yeah.
But it always seems to me like you're describing having fun rather than actually having fun.
Okay.
You strike me as someone who's played D&D, though, did you?
Yeah, I should do, because I love board games. I play a lot of board games, fantasy-based as well. But I haven't. I have not played D&D. There's this board game convention that I go to every year for 3 days, and we play lots of board games. And there's always like a section held back for the D&D players. And I've always tempted to try it. They do like introductory games for new players as well.
Okay.
But I've just never gotten into it. I think it's the time commitment that that challenges me a lot. Like, for a board game, for me, I know it can finish in like 2 to 3 hours.
Hmm.
But the time commitment to build the character and the structure. My brother plays D&D, and he loves D&D. He plays a lot of it. And he's always been trying to, you know, encourage me to get it. He's telling me how fun it is and all that. But yeah, the time thing takes...
Yeah, I still forgot to say why it doesn't appeal, because I've not, as I said, I've not done D&D itself, and I've done very little in RPG, and not for a very, very long time. But I know from the outside, it feels a bit like it's on rails. Like improv, you can make up anything you like and go anywhere you like, and this, to me, sounds a bit, here's your character, and this is what it can do, and roll these dice, and now you can say, I'm going to fight this guy, and then roll a dice and see what happens. And that doesn't sound that much fun to me. But as I say, without having really done it, I can't. Lay judgment, and I say, I have several friends who love it, so fair enough. What surprised me slightly, so there might be people who know even less about D&D than we do. I think what surprised me is that there's how well defined the world seems to be, so lots of characters and races and all these individual things, because I kind of assumed it was here's a fantasy world and just do what you like in it, but it seems very much here are the things that exist.
Yeah, and everyone knows the world that exists as well. And I don't know what came first, though. Like, a lot of fantasy tropes, I understand a lot of tropes borrow from each other as well, as you can imagine. But, you know, D&D is quite an old game. I can imagine lots of books their writings from, and books and films take their ideas from D&D, and probably vice versa as well.
Yes, yeah, so I'm a fan of the card game Munchkin, and that's very much based. Well, the original one was very much based on D&D, so I do recognise some of these things as a crossing over with that. But I'm sure there were hundreds of references that I did not understand.
Yeah, me too. It's having a bit of a renaissance right now. Apart from the film, it's very big on Stranger Things, as it brought it back into the limelight. Critical Role is a YouTube channel incredible for those who enjoy D&D. You get like proper voice actors, and they are really good, you know. Like, you get voice actors to play D&D, you get incredible stuff. Deborah Ann Woll, who plays Karen in the Daredevil series, brought Charlie Cox into a D&D session as well, Colin.
All right.
It's on YouTube if you want to have a look at it. So Charlie's a newbie. He's not played D&D before, and then Deborah was the Dungeon Master. And it's a very good... It's only 1 hour.
Dungeon Master is so lame. I'm sorry.
Oh, Colin.
I'm sorry, Dungeon Master. Anyway, yes, there's a couple of episodes of D&D in Community as well, which is a lot of fun. Because, in fact, is Dan Harmon involved in Critical Role?
Yeah. Just a side note, anyway, I think the D&D episode in Community has been banned. Has been removed from its...
Has it?
Yeah, because Ken Jeong painted his face black.
Good lord. Well, there's two episodes, so you can watch the other one.
Yep. Anyway, back to the film.
The first thing about this film that I really liked.
Yep.
Really, really liked was that it's called Honor Among Thieves, and in the UK release, they put a U in honor. Thank you, Dungeons and Dragons. Because you know how you feel like Time Traveler's Wife? They didn't put a double L when it came over here. They didn't care. I mean, the fact they took the trouble.
If people were going to be pedantic, it would be people who play Dungeons and Dragons, I would say.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know whether they use English spelling or American spelling in whatever world Dungeons and Dragons is set in.
Yep.
Is there a name for a world?
I don't think so.
It's set in the Forgotten Realms campaign setting.
There are many versions of Dungeons and Dragons.
I don't know what you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the film. Yeah. This was directed by Jonathan Goldstein and John Francis Daly, who made that excellent Game Night, which we both love.
Game Night is great, yes.
Very, very good film. So the film stars Chris Pine, as we mentioned before, Michelle Rodriguez in another We Are Family film, Reggae John Page.
Because of Fast and Furious. Yes. Okay.
Justice Smith, Sophia Lillis, and Hugh Grant. And in this film, and I copied the synopsis from Google, and it's probably a very, very bad way of summarizing it, but a charming thief and a band of unlikely adventurers embark on an epic quest to retrieve a long-lost relic, but their adventure goes dangerously awry when they run afoul of the wrong people, which basically sounds like every other D&D campaign ever, really.
I guess that's the idea. Because when this was first announced, I did wonder, are they going to do it as a kind of, I guess, like Community did, where you see the people playing the game and then you see them as their characters or something like that, but they don't do that at all. There's no game element to this. It's just it's a fantasy story that contains tropes from D&D.
Yep.
But I'm really glad they didn't, but I was kind of expecting
like a Lego movie kind of thing where it zooms out.
Yeah, so maybe something like that, but or maybe something a little bit subtler where it's, oh, you're going to need some great dexterity to do that kind of thing. And I'm quite glad they didn't. This is one of the few things I know about D&D is that you roll for dexterity or you roll for luck or whatever else. I didn't think they'd actually get a big dice up. I thought they might make reference to that, because it is just a fantasy movie, isn't it?
It is. It is a pure fantasy. Basically a bunch of ragtag adventurers with individual characteristics band together to fight a great evil. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've seen this compared to Guardians of the Galaxy, which I can definitely see as these people thrown together. Although the kind of, as you say, the idea of a ragtag group of disparate characters is not exactly new.
No, it isn't. It's in all. As I say, right? How old is Dungeons and Dragons? Right? Who created this whole ragtag group of adventurers?
I mean, fairness, ragtag group of adventurers has probably been going for thousands of years.
Exactly.
That feels like kind of round the campfire type stuff as well. So Chris Pine, definitely the lead of this. He's yet again playing the charming rogue, but he does it so well.
He's really good at that, though. He knows his role. The same way we can say about Michelle Rodriguez, who plays the badass, which she's played in every single film.
Justice Smith plays the slightly awkward guy, which he seems to play in a lot of his films.
I feel like they know who to cast when they already written out the roles, basically.
I recently saw All the Bright Places, which is a Justin Smith film. I've not seen huge amounts of his stuff, but he was in Pokemon, wasn't he?
He was in Detective Pikachu, and he was in one of the Jurassic films, right?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah,
they were quite bad, the Jurassic films, so we didn't talk about it.
Fair enough. I thought Chris Pine, there were times, particularly when he was doing some kind of goofier jokes, I was like, he really reminds me of someone, and I couldn't work out who it was. And it was only afterwards that I realized it was Jason Bateman. I thought he was quite Jason Bateman-y.
I can see that.
Which works with Game Night, which obviously starred Jason Bateman, so I guess maybe there's a link there. But yeah, we haven't talked about Sophia Lillis, who I don't know. I've never seen her in anything before. Who played some sort of creature.
A druid, basically. A shapeshifter. So,
there you go.
If you want to talk about typical Dungeons & Dragons roles, Chris Pine is supposed to be the bard because he has a lute. You have Michelle Rodriguez, who plays the barbarian. These are very common tropes in lots of games and books and history. Yeah.
Amazing that bard is as common a trope as it is.
Not really, but it's very well liked though by D&D players because it's one of those aloof kind of characters. You can do whatever you want. You play music to inspire people to do things. It's a kind of role that people like to get their hands into, right? It allows for a lot of imagination and creativity. Justice Smith plays the sorcerer. He who casts magic. Sophia Lillis plays the druid, who can typically shapeshift into different creatures, including an owl bear, which you'll see in the trailers anyway, so which is a very D&D character. And then you have Reggae John Page, he from Bridgerton fame, who plays a paladin.
Yeah, Yes, and he's not one of the main crew, but he turns up and does his stuff very well. I think he's in it for just the right amount of movie.
I think he might have run
dry a bit. But.
I was reading somewhere that he is there as a parody of the Dungeon Master's overpowered non-player character that he brings into the game to give exposition and then disappear after a while.
Well, I'm sure it was a great parody.
Well, people enjoyed it when they saw it. So yeah, I mean, we did a lot of comments. So.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. And we just kind of bring you to the exposition point. And suddenly at the start of this film, I was thinking, wow, they've really hit us with a lot of exposition here, kind of chatting about everything they've gone through.
Their backstory, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they did it really well in that it was funny and it was in character and the kind of recurring jokes and it, as well as you can do that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it works. And again, I have to go back and relate it to D&D, the game itself, because I've been trawling through Reddit and the comment section, and I think a lot of people appreciated it because at the beginning of the game, people are supposed, the players are supposed to come up with a whole backstory for their characters, right? So literally, Chris Pine explaining his backstory is how a player would have done it at the beginning of a game. So yeah, that's just playing tribute to the game itself, really.
Sounds like a lot of work for a game.
Oh, Colin, you're going to enjoy your first D&D game and you're going to come back and say how much you regret saying this.
I didn't realize I had to do homework before it started. Wow.
Yeah. All right.
Fine. I've written here that I thought Michelle Rodriguez was the weak link, which I think maybe is harsh because she wasn't bad. But if anyone was there, I thought she was a bit more one-dimensional than some of these characters.
Yeah, I get that. I get it as well. Of all the five characters, you kind of understand their motives. I did quite like when she went back to her village and her husband, her ex-husband.
We'll come on to that in spoilers, I think.
Yeah. I did quite like that bit. Some different sides of her, really. As you said, she can come across as one-dimensional.
Yeah, it was nice to see a bit more of her there. She's not an actress I've seen a lot of her work, I must admit. We haven't really talked too much about Hugh Grant. Hugh Grant was a big part of the reason I watched this, actually, because I think he's been making some really interesting choices. And I thought, if he likes the script, it's probably good, because he doesn't mind turning stuff down. He plays Forge, but Hugh, what was Forge?
I think he's supposed to be a thief.
Or is he a con man?
A con man, I think. Yeah, but I think from the trailers, you can tell that he is slightly evil. Like, he turned his back against them and, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's supposed to be a spoiler, but it's in the trailers and it's fairly obvious from the start that's where it's going. Evil might be strong. I mean, he's definitely...
No, he's just looking out for his own interest, really. He's more self...
Yeah.
Centered than anything else. Really.
I've written here Sophie Lillis, colon, great hair.
He does have great hair, though.
There's some great hair from pretty much everyone in this, actually.
Yeah. For people who are living in, like a proper fantasy land, they really have wonderful hair, wonderful teeth.
Yeah. But I'm looking at the poster now. I don't think there's a bad hair style here. Apart from, I guess, ironically, Daisy Head, who plays the bald. Red Wizard.
Yep, who is the antagonist of this film.
And is probably...
scary.
What written here. Yeah, suitably malevolent is what I've written here.
She really is. Her scream was incredible. I really like that scream. Like, when you hear a bad guy scream, it could, come across very cringeworthy, but her scream was proper terrifying.
Like, yeah. And I like the fact that she's got this kind of, and that's maybe slight spoilers, but she has this some kind of relationship with Forge, and you can see just her contempt for him, coming through, which I thought was well done. So yeah, I'm a bit of a sucker for the kind of the ragtag band of misfits trope, but I think it's done very well here. I to the extent that I think these characters are more than the sum of their parts. Because if you pick any one of them in isolation, you're probably not seeing that much. I mean, it's not bad by any means, but I think they work together better than they would individually.
I think so. And I think they are very distinct as well, right? That's the thing. Like, you can tell each other apart. They're not like rehashes of each other. And you can kind of understand each of their motivations. And I think that helps in a film like this. You kind of need to understand why people are grouping up together.
Yeah. And there's a risk when there's... Because there's a lot going on in this film. There's a lot of set pieces. There's a lot of rushing from one place to another. And there's a risk that you lose some of the characterization if you do that. And I think they've managed to avoid that by and large. I think they managed to get these characters to come out and to work together well. I guess that's... if I'm criticizing it, it's part of the exposition. It's partly the... It felt very much, here's this stage of the quest, and here's the next stage of the quest, and I've got to do this. Which, I'm guessing, is a very D&D thing anyway.
It probably is. I think one thing I wanted to add as well, like, even though we know we don't... Even though we do not know whether there are any sequels left, but I like that the fact that this was a self-contained story. I'm a bit tired of the whole, you know, overarching world building. You know, we need this, we need a prequel, we need a sequel, we need to make sure that all these characters will come back in the future. We need to make references to this. I'm just happy that this is a proper... It finishes, it ends, and that's it. I can go home happy. I don't need to worry about what's going to happen in the future for this.
It's I mean, I think we're definitely going to get a sequel if it makes enough money. So I do think they had one eye on the sequel, not least from the title. And if every single film in this franchise has a subtitle that requires changing for British spelling, I'm on board. I think that's fine. But no, you're right. We have so many films that are franchise starters and they forgot to make a good film. Yes. And I think this is a franchise starter, but they still cared about the film.
Yep.
So that was nice to see. I also really appreciated that it was surprisingly moving at times. Mm. And they didn't feel the need to undercut that. With a joke. Because it's something that I think Marvel films have been accused of, and rightly so. They do that too often. And the Guardians films even, which are some of the better Marvel films, they do that a lot. Whereas this is like, this is an emotional moment, and we're going to just let it be an emotional moment, and we don't need a gag to undercut it, which was good. And there was kind of a romantic subplot, and you know how I feel about romantic subplots.
Even kind of ones.
Yeah, it was a little bit half-hearted, but I look forward to seeing more of that in the sequel.
That's true. I enjoyed this film a lot. I think it was good fun, and you know, it doesn't mock D&D culture. I mean, like, I think they take the source material seriously. Like, I see interviews with the cast, and they really, really like the game. Like, some of them have not played it before. I think there was a session, there was an interview where they played a game of D&D together. But I think they respect the game for what it is, and respect the source material for where it comes from. So,
geeks have got big money these days. So,
you really do.
I did see, I think it was at Comic-Con, where they were asking the cast what class they would be. And Hugh Grant just said the best class. I don't think Hugh Grant is joining in the cast D&D sessions.
No, definitely.
But he's probably 20 years older than any of them, so fair enough. Yes, no, I don't think it was perfect. I think, well, the things I said, but I came away enjoying it. Not enough to buy the Funko Pops of it, of which there are a set, but I still enjoyed it. Mm. Shall we move on to spoilers?
Yep, spoilers.
Spoilers. Well, let's talk about Michelle Rodriguez's first husband.
Yep.
A slightly weird cameo.
By Bradley Cooper.
Mm. Speaking of Guardians of the Galaxy. Yes, he is very small.
Very, very small. I think he plays like a halfling or something.
Something like that. There you go. Yes, halfling. He's called Marlamin, if anyone cares. And let me tell you, they spent the money elsewhere in this film because the effect did not work.
No, the CGI was awful. It was really, really bad.
Some of the CGI, some of it was... Well, maybe not CGI, maybe it was blue screen or green screen or whatever else, but some of it seemed to be done in camera, just not very well. Yeah. It was a bit of a shambles. And also, I don't think worth it for the joke.
Maybe. Yeah, probably not, but yeah, it's good to see him there, though.
Was it? It was confusing to me.
It added dimensions to the Michelle Rodriguez character. That's why you wanted.
That's true. It gave a nice dimension. But I was thinking, it's like, is Bradley Cooper a huge D&D fan? Because I can't think of any other reason he's turned up in this movie.
No, me either.
And, I mean, he could be, I guess. But yes, by and large, this film looks really good, actually. The budget was $150 million, apparently, which is a fair amount, but it's not like crazy.
I mean, I really like the the shape-shifting scenes when she was escaping. I thought that scene was incredible. Yes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you're going to do with a character with shape-shifting powers, this is the kind of scene you want to do, right? Like, being able to turn into various animals at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, it was all done in one shot, and you saw her change into several different animals to get away from whatever the current difficulty was. Yeah, I really like that. Other than, like, I do get a bit annoyed when... And it's the same in Shazam too, last time. I get a bit annoyed when someone who has already demonstrated that they have something that can kill someone then doesn't do that from about a yard away. It's like, you couldn't hit the cat? Come on.
It's very far, Colin.
Yeah, well, okay. But yeah, no, that was very imaginative. And yeah, this, like I say, it's a nice looking film. And things like... I don't know how much detail we want to go into, but when they go into the underground caves and you've got this big fat dragon coming out, that looked good. And there was a nice twist on the dragon, I thought.
Yeah, I like that. I like the swole dragon.
They bring corpses awake and ask them five questions, which apparently is a D&D thing. They look good. Apparently, those corpses were voiced by Auntie Donna, but only in the Australian version. They're an Australian sketch show group.
Ah, very nice. Yeah, that was very funny as well, that whole scene. I think my cinema was laughing at that scene quite a bit.
That was very funny, yeah. And apparently, I didn't stick around for post-credits, but there was a corpse in the post-credits asking to be asked the final question.
Wish I could. My favorite scene of the whole film was the reverse heist scene, when they're trying to put the portal into the caravan. That was my favorite because you can see each of them using their own individual abilities to not just fight their way out, it's just to solve a problem. And I thought that was very cleverly done.
Yes, that was nice and very imaginative. Nice. Because I say, you could easily just have that as a, we put a portal in the carriage and we can jump in, done.
Yeah, but no, exactly.
And it's the kind of classic heist. I mean, not just that scene, but the kind of the wider heist, because they're trying to get into the castle and whatever. But it's the kind of classic, we've got this plan and it should be fine, but actually it goes horribly wrong, and how do you cope with it going wrong, which is basically every heist movie. But they do it very well, because at one point, I think they try that and it doesn't work because the portal is in a painting and the painting falls over and blah, blah. So they go back to the previous plan, and I think, that was a bit of waste. But then... they do it really well because they kind of then combine the plans.
Yep, together.
Yeah. I did like the kind of plan A, plan B, plan C is do plan A, plan B is do plan B. Okay, that was very funny. And yeah, that's where we discover that that Forge, who we thought... I think we always knew he wasn't the main antagonist, but we kind of realised how much he's out of his depth, and he was only doing this to steal some gold, whereas the red wizard is... is it red wizard? Red witch? Red
something. Yep.
Wizard, is the real kind of evil person who is going to destroy his entire city.
Not too sure what her plan is, though, ultimately.
Turn everyone into those weird creatures?
But can't she just turn... Yeah, and then so they escaped it because there's a limit to the range of it, I guess, so...
Yeah, because everyone ran out of the stadium in one go. That was a little bit unrealistic. I did like the whole maze thing and the jumping around the maze. Very, very similar to our games or something.
I mean,
like that,
I prefer that maze to the Harry Potter maze, which was done so poorly in the films.
Okay.
Yeah. And one more thing that I'm not sure whether you know about it, but you know that the other contenders in the maze, right?
Okay.
One of the group is basically dressed as the 80s cartoon Dungeons and Dragons. The kids
all right.
In there. Yeah.
Good reference. Well done, everyone.
Yeah.
They jumped into gelatinous cube, and I had heard of gelatinous cube, but that was about the extent of my D&D knowledge.
That's from Munchkin. It's in Munchkin as well.
It's from Munchkin, yeah, that's why I know. But I think I knew it was D&D, maybe. And then, yes, I've talked about it being moving, but throughout the film, Chris Pine's character, I don't know any of their names, Edgin, was... trying to bring his wife back because his wife had been killed, and he was off to some clever majig that would do that, and he basically abandoned his daughter in order to go on this quest to find this thing, and she never really forgave him, partly because Forge has lied to her about why he did it. And then we have these kind of dream sequences where his wife says, doesn't quite say, but basically says, let me go, and someone else is like, let me move on to the next life, and then Michelle Rodriguez gets killed by some magic that means you can't solve it unless
Unless
you use your little thingamajig.
Yeah.
What's it called? Tablet of Reawakening. Which was, I mean, it was, I was fairly confident he wasn't going to bring his wife back. I thought maybe he might bring his daughter back in some way, but this worked very well because the daughter, I never really knew her mother, and Michelle Rodriguez was like another mother to her. And yeah, I'm not ashamed to say, Zijian, there were tears in my eyes as that scene happened.
No, I think that worked. I think, especially when Chris Pine was realized that he was trying to resurrect the wife, his wife rather than her mother. I thought that was very moving.
Yeah, it was. And kind of when he realizes he's going to have to basically give up on his dream to give his daughter what she needs. One thing I think don't think this film did brilliantly was explain what harpers are.
What are?
Harpers.
Oh, yeah, I'm not too sure what they are either.
Because they make a big deal about Chris Pine's character having been a harper and having a book that's got something to do with being a harper. And I was sitting there thinking, like, does that mean he plays a harp? What's going on here? I don't. And I still don't know, really.
Yeah, me neither.
There you go. It's a big thing in D&D, apparently. So, good luck to him. I'm just looking at how well it's done. It's a $150 million budget. Apparently, it's made about $90 million at the box office, but I don't know whether that's good or bad based on how long it's been out. Got good reviews, but if it doesn't at least, well, they always say you have to double the budget to cover marketing, don't you? So you'd be looking to make $300 million to break even, or thereabouts. If it's made 90, I suspect we're in trouble.
Is it out in China yet, though? Is it going to be out in China?
Is it getting out in China? They don't like films like magic, do they?
No,
the Chinese government. So I suspect it might not be.
Yeah, that's where the money is, unfortunately.
Mm.
That's why people pander to China.
Mm. So maybe we're not going to get the future. Here we go. A spin-off TV series is in development. Yeah. All right.
But
they keep doing this. They keep announcing films with spin-off TV series. But as far as I'm aware, none of them have ever actually happened. Have they ever happened?
Not that I know of. Star Wars.
Yeah, but it wasn't like they announced Star Wars and we're going to do a TV series. I think like the Batman was going to have three TV series, and I don't think any of them actually happened. Yeah. In April 2023, Daily stated, it was never our intention when we came on board this film to make a franchise. All right. So we shall see. But I will definitely watch a sequel if they make one.
Mm, me too.
I mean, Hugh Grant's happy because he'll have signed on for one film. There's no way he was going back for a sequel.
Nope.
Has Hugh Grant ever done a sequel? Yes. Bridget Jones 2. I'm just answering all my own questions today. Do you have anything more to say about Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves?
Go watch it.
We want to see a sequel, so go and watch it.
Yeah.
And I can report back on whether I enjoy D&D.
Yes.
Let's move on then to Look Back in Oscar, the segment where we talk about a film that has won the Best Picture Oscar in the past season. We're talking about Platoon, not Patton.
Easily confused. This is a 1986 American war film written and directed by Oliver Stone, starring Tom Berenger, I'm not pronouncing that right, William Dafoe, Charlie Sheen, Keith David, Kevin Dillon, John C. McGinley, Forrest Whitaker, and Johnny Depp. It was actually quite fun trying to figure out who his actors were, because I definitely couldn't pick out Johnny Depp, for example.
It was a very, very young Johnny Depp. He doesn't have a huge amount to do in this.
Definitely couldn't pick it out at all. The others I could, I mean, but yeah, Johnny Depp, definitely not. It's the first film of a trilogy of Vietnam War films directed by Stone. This is followed by Born on the 4th of July and then Heaven and Earth.
I don't know Heaven and Earth.
Okay. Yeah. This film follows a US Army volunteer played by Charlie Sheen serving in Vietnam while his platoon sergeant and his squad leader argue over morality in the platoon and of the war itself. The film was nominated for 8 Academy Awards, won 4 including Picture, Best Director, Best Sound and Best Film Editing.
Yeah, it's is this the first time you've seen this?
Yes. Yes, and I like this film a lot more than I thought I would. Okay. I think, so when I first sat down and watched this film, my first thing I was thinking like, oh no, not another war movie. And it turns out it's not just another war movie, because the more I watched it, the more fascinated I was with it, and I really enjoyed it. It's really good.
Yeah, as you know, I don't always watch war movies, but I have seen this one before. I watched it again yesterday. Oliver Stone served in Vietnam and obviously did not have a happy experience there, because as so many didn't, and I think that very much coloured his views and why he kept making films about this. But Yeah, the idea of basically the battle for Charlie Sheen's soul in this film between, as you say, these two sergeants, captains, anyway, whichever one, and their different views, and the kind of the fact that the real enemy isn't
each other,
the Viet Cong is each other, yeah, and the way that pans out, it's done really well. I think there's some really great performances in this, and it is a beautiful film. As well as being a horrible film in many ways, but that famous shot of Willem Dafoe when he gets killed and his kind of hands up in the air, which is it's a very well known shot, and it's beautifully done.
I know that's a well known shot, but I found that whole sequence very OTT.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think it works, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, come on. I don't know, maybe I would prefer a more subtler take of it, but it was just way too dramatic of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think deliberately so. And maybe in 1986, it would have seemed less over the top, I don't know. I've reenacted that scene in a quiz I put together.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, that may be where you recognise it from. Who knows?
Over the top acting, yes.
Yeah, fair enough. I was trying to think through the Vietnamese war films I've seen, and I do really like Casualties of War, which is even harder to watch than this. Because I think it's interesting, actually. I think if Oliver Stone made this later, he would have made this 18. I think he would have had more power to do that. And it is a 15, and you don't see the real kind of cruelties and depravities of war. You hear about them.
Yeah, but
and you do see kind of casual murder and threatened rape and things, but it's not like focusing in on the grisly detail. Like if someone gets shot in the stomach, you don't see their guts falling out kind of thing.
Especially things like the Vietnam War. Like my history of wars isn't the greatest, but I'm pretty certain the Vietnam War was America just going to Vietnam to fight the Soviets or prevent the Soviets from coming into Vietnam from the top. It's basically an extension of the Cold War. That was the idea. And then, obviously, the Viet Cong got into place. But I kind of don't feel sorry for the Americans in this film because,
Well, I think the idea, certainly Oliver Stone's view, would be feel sorry for the soldiers, not the country.
Yeah, I guess, agree.
It's interesting that Charlie Sheen his character was a volunteer because it was mostly, well, not sure mostly, but there was a conscription and people were forced to go out there, they were drafted in. Yeah, just to see him kind of almost idealistically turning up to say, all right, I need to do this for my country and to lose that. Yeah, so definitely watch Platoon. It's great.
No, it's a very good film. I really enjoyed this.
Next time it's Actor Factor, where we look at the film's particular actor, and it's going to be Jeff Bridges.
Okay.
No particular reason, Jeff Bridges. And we finish, as we always do, on the quiz. Zijan, I think I'm winning quite comfortably this year.
I know, I made a mistake suggesting this. I was just going through the list. I was like, Colin has seen all of these because Tom Cruise is in all of them.
He's in a few. I do like a lot of these films, and I must admit, I've not done huge amounts of research because I looked and think, I know this film, which is always a dangerous way to go in, but we shall see. Why don't you kick us off?
I mean, you've got a huge buffer anyway, so.
That's true.
Question one, which is the easy one. What's the song that's being played during the boombox scene in Say Anything?
In Your Eyes.
That's correct.
Question one for you. Which Crow film is loosely based on a memoir by Benjamin Mee?
Benjamin Mee?
Not the England defender, Ben Mee.
I wouldn't know that. Let's go with Jerry Maguire, because why not?
No. No, I think that's about a character called Jerry Maguire. It's We Bought a Zoo.
Oh, I didn't know that. Question two, what's the name of the fictional band that William was tasked to write about in Almost Famous?
I have seen this, but not for a long time, and it's one of the ones I know least. And the Spitfires.
The Stillwater.
Yeah. I had a quick skim of the article, and I did see the letter S. That was which is the only one of Cameron Crowe's movies that has received any BAFTA nominations?
Huh.
According to Wikipedia, I did ask ChatGPT to confirm this, and they told me stuff that was not true.
Did you check it?
Well, but they just made it up, including telling me that Elizabethtown was nominated for the David Lean Award. I was like, pretty sure that's not true.
I know Almost Famous is the most awarded of them all, but I'm not too sure whether BAFTAs would recognize that, though. But I'll go with that because that's the one I can think of right now. Yeah, let's go with that.
Correct.
Question three. What stock character type was coined by a film critic after observing Kirsten Dunst's character in Elizabethtown?
Manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah, I love that.
And very justifiably. Question three for you. What song by Peter Gabriel was playing on the boombox Lloyd holds up in Say Anything?
Yeah, In Your Eyes.
Correct. I even gave you the artist, you see. That's how generous I'm feeling this week.
Oh, Colin, you've seen all these films before. I haven't. Question four. Which is the only Cameron Crowe film that was nominated for a Razzie?
I mean, it should be Aloha, because that was terrible. But then Elizabethtown was also not beloved. Vanilla Sky even might have been. I'm going to say Aloha.
It was Vanilla Sky. Penelope Cruz for Worst Supporting Actress.
That's harsh. In Vanilla Sky, Tom Cruise's character runs through which unusually empty location?
Oh, I've not seen this. I'm going to go airport.
It's Times Square. It's quite a famous shot, but they managed to get clearance to basically get clear Times Square and just have him run through it.
I've not seen it before. Last question for you. It's a Jerry Maguire question, so you should know this.
Okay.
What word is used by Rod Tidwell in Jerry Maguire, meaning love, respect, and community, as a way to distinguish himself and other football players?
Kwan.
That's correct.
You are my ambassador of Kwan. Right, 3-2 to me, but you can pull it back if you can tell me which state is Elizabethtown in?
Kentucky.
Congratulations. It is, and it's a real place, apparently. 3-3. It's a draw. I will put that in my spreadsheet. Zijan, what are we quizzing on next time?
This is my suggestion.
Oh, yeah. In which case, I did write this down. We are quizzing on the films of James Mangold, because he's the zeitgeist.
He's big now.
But let me ask you instead, what's our main topic for next time?
Speaking about what's big now.
Yes.
We're doing something with ChatGPT, apparently.
We're doing something with ChatGPT. We haven't quite figured it out yet. No. But I've got some ideas. But it's going to involve asking some questions to ChatGPT, which, if you don't know, is an AI chatbot type thing, and get some film-related ideas offered and see what we think.
Yeah, can you let me know what they are first as well so I can ask the same questions?
I mean, we could... you can come up with some if you want.
Oh, okay, fine. Is that kind of podcast?
Well, we'll see what happens and we'll see you then.
Bye.